Blog Talk Radio.
Homie, I hope you see the big picture, cause everything ain't what it seems. And when you get what you ain't paid for, somebody owe, cause ain't a damn thing free. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see the big picture. Somebody get paid just to polish it. Look the devil right in the eyes and won't acknowledge it. For some it's automatic that they turn into some college kids. But my kind won't make it out the hood without a scholarship. Faced with adversity that some will never understand. Why be in denial when you know you had the upper hand? Playing used to rally downtown in my city. And you wonder why the race relationship so shitty? Show no pity. That's the motto of the PC. It ain't just my city. It's all over the TV. Martin Luther King. I think about the dream he had for a nation that turned him less than 6 feet. And I ain't saying that the government sent a hit. But the timing show make it a coincidence. I try to see the big picture through a small frame. And never take no wooden nickels when they all
homie,
change.
I hope you see the big picture. Cause everything ain't what it seems. And when you get what you ain't paid for, somebody owe, cause ain't a damn thing free. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see
the big picture's worth a thousand words. So when your words ain't visible, it cause concern. I live and learn to the point where I can see it coming. The loudest mouth in the room ain't really about nothing. That nigga bluffing, check his resume, it ain't legit. You know the one that bought the ocean but ain't got a ship. You know the one that bought the sixes but ain't got a whip. You know the one that bought the Tech 9 and ain't got a clip. These boys a trip, I done heard it all, seen it all before. Boys be more like shaved ice when they claim they Tony Snow. Say they Don Juan and got passport bitches. But why you in the club with them trash bags with you? Say you out there ballin' and you're coming up quick. But it ain't worth having things if you can't own shit. MC Bree told you ain't no future, no frontin'. Keep that shit to Birdman with all of that stunt. Homie, I hope you see the big picture. Cause everything ain't what it seems. And when you get what you ain't paid for, somebody owe, cause ain't a damn thing free. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see the big picture.
All right, peace, power, and love, family. Welcome, welcome, brothers and sisters. Sorry for that slight delay. This is the Panther Party Radio Network, and this is The Big Picture with Melvin Siri Jr. I'm still mobile right now, so y'all just bear with me. Like to welcome everybody who's listening online and like to also welcome those brothers and sisters that I see we're picking up over in Nigeria and Germany. Thank you all, Canada, of course, United States. Just want to thank everybody who takes the time out to listen, and hopefully not just to listen, but to think and participate in the happenings and in what's going on around us. We've all got to start paying closer attention to what's happening. I've got a special show planned for tonight as well, and also thank my listeners on Activate Radio, on activatemedia.org as well. I appreciate everybody who takes, like I say, the time to listen. This is just a place where we pass knowledge and solutions and where we pay attention to what's going on. And the mission for me is to unite the brothers, to bring the brothers together back to the forefront of this fight. If y'all happened to catch my show last week, I went in kind of hard on this system and the police. I talked about two of my relatives who died at the hands of these racist cops. And I didn't bite my tongue. I ran it for a couple of hours. I didn't think I was going to go that long, but it ended up being a lot more on my mind that needed to be said and needed to be heard as well. And not only that, to try to further help us understand our need for each other. On tonight's show, I am welcoming back my brother Rakeem Balogun, and he is right here in the DFW area with me, and those of you who may not have caught the first show he was on, I'm not going to try to tell his story, and I know he doesn't want to rack over the story again, but I know he didn't mind giving a brief version of, you know, what he went through with this raggedy-ass system. And I'm glad that he's back tonight, because his story is just a prime example of how they try to label us and how they try to use these labels and these terms to make us appear worse than we truly are. Because I've said this hundreds of times, I don't know any black organization who has actively went out and hunted people down and hung people that didn't look like them out of pure hatred. That was not what any of our groups was about, and not what really any of them are about. And this brother really solidifies that, and he's a younger brother, and I truly appreciate his heart, his fight, his effort, his time, and everything that he puts into it, because I know what that entails. And with me, I'm not as much boots on the ground, but I have linked up with this brother, and I do intend on having to sit down with this brother in the near future. I see he is online, and on tonight's show, I'm going to give my brother Rakeem the floor. And first off, let me throw this out there to anybody that's listening online right now that would like to call in. The call-in number, I forgot all about that, huh? Is 914-205-5538. Again, 914-205-5538. And for those of you who are listening right now online, we will be opening up the mics. This show, I feel like, is going to have quite a few of us on it. So all I'm asking that everyone do is just respect the person that's speaking. When you are done, or if you're not speaking, to mute your microphone so that we don't hear any background interference with those of us who may be speaking. And when you are done speaking, just let everybody know, you know, so the next person that we would like to speak, you know, can jump in and make his comment or question or whatever the case may be. But once again, I got my brother, and I'm going to open up his mic now. And I'm going to keep my lips together, and I'm going to let this brother once again platform and tell us a little bit about himself for those of you, like I say, who may have missed the first show. And also, brother, this is really just a time tonight where we can just discuss the issues. We can discuss whatever it is that is truly the problem, and we all know what that is. But I'm going to give you the floor first, because you are once again the guest of honor tonight. So I think I got your mic open. I was having some problems just then, but I think I got you open now, brother. And welcome again, brother. Appreciate you for joining me.
Yo, peace and power.
Peace, brother, peace.
Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How's the day? How's everything?
Oh, brother, all is well. You know, I'm happy to still be in good health and, you know, still be able to, you know, walk this earth and be able to provide for my family. You know, so, you know, I have no complaints. And yourself?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm doing well myself, brother. Like yourself, I don't have any complaints. I'm only complaint I got is, damn it, where my freedom? I think that's the question of the hour, the question of the decade. But other than that, all is well. All is well, and just trying to make it better. You know how that is.
Most definitely. And just, you know, pretty much to do a brief rundown on, you know, who I am and what I have done and what I, you know, still do is I'm pretty much a political organizer. My name is Rakim Balogun, which is spelled R-A-K-E-M. Last name spelled B-A-L-O-G-U-N. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram. I'm also known pretty much by media as Black Identity Extremist, a term coined by the FBI in 2017, which I was arrested by the FBI and detained by terrorists, by FBI terrorist group. I found out that I was under surveillance for, you know, numerous years prior to that. The things that I've done in the community, would it be considered as political education, self-defense courses, providing and coordinating mutual aid such as food, clothes, and shelter. Also, I have also have served as, you know, as an intervention force with outside groups, you know, coming into our community, and as well as dealing with fratricide, which is, you know, black on black crime. You know, so pretty much I was detained by the FBI, and after being detained for about 6 months, a federal judge reviewed my case, you know, and agreed that the FBI had a far overreach and didn't see anything that I've done criminally wrong. And so the case was dismissed. And the things that they, you know, stolen from me, such as numerous guns, a lot of ammo, and as well as, you know, vests and books and, you know, notebooks and tablets and things of that nature. They had to give it back, which it was still intrusion, you know, of my privacy. And so that's pretty much who I am. I identify with the original Black Panther Party ideas and concepts of revolutionary socialism through Pan-Africanism. You know, I study and, you know, pretty much function under the concepts of Huey P. Newton, as well as George Jackson, and numerous other Panthers and freedom fighters from all across the world. I do identify myself as a black militant, but I'm not limited to being a black militant. You know, I feel that I can serve numerous roles, whatever is need you know, to accomplish whatever responsibilities that come with their role. If it's, you know, being a intellectual or strategist, a communicator, an educator, or even a student, you know, those are roles that I don't mind doing, you know, at the spur of the moment. So that's pretty much who I am. You know, I still advocate for the things that I've always advocated for. And, you know, one thing that I push and, you know, recommend is, you know, constant promotion to building revolutions through building, you know, institutions of revolution that would be able to sustain the ideal.
Right on. And you know, me and you have talked, that was a good couple of hours, I think, that first conversation was, and agreed on a whole lot of things. And, you know, I was telling you that I was familiar with your case because that happened right after I had moved up here to the city in 2017. And I remember how angry I got. I can just remember how angry I got when I heard the term black identity extremist, because I knew then that was just an open door to jail any one of us or harass any one of us really truly that decides that they want to speak out and do something different other than what this system and this government wants done, you know. And right now it's so much shit that they got going on that the people as a whole shouldn't be in agreeance with. But, you know, I was telling some brothers earlier today, we still going along to get along, and that's one thing that we got to stop doing. We got to really figure out what's going to work best for us and then implement it and get around like-minded brothers like yourself and many of the other brothers and sisters I'm sure that are going to be on the call tonight are in agreeance with you 100% on that, because my biggest thing is we need our own, because, you know, me and you spoke about this and how what I realized during the pandemic is that we didn't have anything, you know, and we're not working towards getting anything. And as long as we stay, you know, remain in that slump and that mindset of not wanting to work together, build together, and grow together, you know, we're going to constantly make it a few steps up that hill, but we're going to always slide back down. You know, it's about support and the building and the growth. So I do agree, brother, 100%, you know, as when we spoke the last time. So nothing's changed on that aspect, and I appreciate you giving a quick, brief rundown for the people that missed you the first time. Is there anything in particular tonight that you want to touch on, things that may be going on? I know it's a lot going on everywhere, pretty much. You know, it's not really not one place that something's not happening, you know, that's affecting us negatively. But I know that you are more boots on the ground, and especially around the DFW, and I know I'm, you know, in and out of the city. I hear the bad news from all over, and it's, you know, angering. Like I say, last week I just went on a rant session because I was just giving a couple of updates really about some cases, and then, like I say, got to talking about my family members and just really broke this whole situation down. And I want to ask you a question, because I know you have an opinion on this. And me and my brother was speaking on this the other day. I see he's actually on the line listening right now. Anybody who's on the line who wants to join in, just hit the one, and I'll see you get in and open up your mic. But the situation, you know, with the Muslim cop that shot the lady up there in Minnesota, been like maybe 3-4 years ago, and you know they just reduced his sentence, I think, to something like 27 months, if I'm not mistaken. But I was telling a few brothers and sisters at the barbershop the other day, we was just sitting talking, and I said, and then, like I say, my brother Kevin, me and him was speaking about that, you know, that really is going to open the door. You know, like last week I talked about qualified immunity and why they don't deserve it, you know, first off. And then I'm all for defunding the police because, yeah, defund them and do something that's beneficial with that money. You know, some of these neighborhoods that they are terrorizing can use some of that very money that they militarizing these police departments with to bring jobs and opportunity. And because they spend, you know, millions of dollars now militarizing these police departments. So I'm with both of those solutions and qualified immunity with what happened now, and you know, Derek Chauvin has already filed for an appeal. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. What do you think about them reducing that sentence and the precedent that you think it'll set as far as law enforcement and the lenience that they already have, but that makes it a little easier?
Well, you know, the way I see it is America doing America, you know. What do you expect? You know, why would they not protect their own soldiers? You know, they know that the black community is some political chumps. And they know that it don't take much to pacify the black community. And, you know, by giving out a verdict with a sentence, with an initial sentence, you know, the black community is like, okay, the white man's system, you know, fixed the problem. I can go back putting my attention back to being the black community and whatever, you know, that is, while the white man, you know, through his governments and institutions and policies and legislation are able to change the course that they told the community that they was going to follow through the appellate courts. And this is something that has been happening for a while. And we cannot expect anything different, you know. Yes, they will. Usually it just takes that case getting in front of the right appellate judge. And, you know, another thing is with appeals, a lot of times you don't really find out about the appeal until there's actually a ruling already done.
Right.
You usually don't get the same amount of attention as the initial case.
Oh, no doubt.
You know, you may see a write-up or a reporter come after they made a ruling. You know, so America is doing what they're supposed to do, you know. It's just time for us to start doing what we're supposed to do. I think that's the biggest problem, is that, you know, we can't, you know, as long as we continue to be disorganized and continue to build and move forward as a people, we can't complain about any injustice or mistreatment. Because at the end of the day, it's a situation where capitalism is going to cap. we definitely know that.
Right.
White supremacy is going to do what it do, you know, and it's not going to stop. And history is going to constantly repeat itself. And unfortunately with us, the black community, the history is constantly repeating itself. We have to find a way to make history stop repeating itself. And it starts with each and every individual looking at themselves and pinpointing things that don't need to continue to be repeated, like being lazy or procrastination, not be willing to execute, you know, not willing to be humble, not willing to check our egos, you know, things of that nature. We have to, you know, really, you know, look at ourselves and make sure that we're not constantly doing a toxic, repetitive behavior, you know. And so, you know, in political education, they have a concept called combat liberalism, where we are aware what being liberal is, and we all make an effort to combat that. You know, we cannot trust the criminal justice system or expect any real significant justice. You know, today they had the COP, what was that, the COP 26 conference. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I was listening earlier about that. They were talking about that, yeah.
Well, if anybody, for those who didn't tune in, pretty much all the countries confirmed that we're on our last days and we're on our last leg, and because the globe is, the earth is continuously to warm up, and certain hot regions are on the front line of that. And of course, you know, it expands out that region and affect other regions as well. And we haven't seen nothing yet for what's to come if we don't reduce our carbon emissions into the atmosphere, which is heating up the planet. You know? And so,
right.
That's a reflection of capitalism, of a system that's ran for profits. They've been known this, but the only reason why they haven't stopped is because it's not cost-friendly, and it hurts their competitive advantage. They're more concerned about their financial competitive advantage than the future of the planet. And so that's the type of craziness that we're living in today. And to see so many nations, you know, come together in solidarity and all admit these things, you know, on a public scale. And not only they admitted it, but they provided, you know, a visual presentation so you can be reminded of the different tsunamis and hurricanes and earthquakes and, you know, tornadoes and fires and et cetera, et cetera. You know, so, but, you know, the only way we can be able to, you know, free ourselves is, you know, we have to, like you said, you know, find like-minded people, you know, organize with them, have conversations, and, you know, try to strategize and put plans together, you know, and educate others. And, you know, this takes time. It takes, you know, it takes tucking in our egos and you know, it definitely takes to be, you know, have a will, and it takes a lot of commitment and conviction, you know. And we usually get that conviction through political education, you know, studying other revolutionaries who were scientific and prolific and concrete and who had concrete analysis, and as well as, you know, we learn from the things that they did, you know, and understand it from a scientific perspective. But we can have a complete understanding, you know. I think last time we talked, you know, we discussed, I think where we left off at is we talked about the 100 days of protest of 2020, of summer 2020. Mm-hmm. And the outcome of that, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, we did
and
get out.
I think
that's where we were getting off into. Yep.
Yeah, and I think I was saying that the biggest problem is that we just got behind anything that was black. And no matter if it made sense or not, because it was this concept of, well, just support black. And
yeah.
That's a very scary thing politically in this day and time, because we have Kamala Harris that's black. You know, we have a lot of people that's black who may not have our best interests in mind as regular black working class people.
Right.
And so, you know, we watched, you know, during the pandemic when the country was shut down and people had time and energy to pay attention to the current social conditions even during the pandemic. After dealing with the stress with that, and once they saw police brutality, especially in the case with George Floyd and the other cases surrounding his cases throughout the country, that would seem like it was consecutive back to back. You know, that started a big protest movement that was lasted over 100 days, and you know, in numerous cities, in dozens of cities around the U.S. and around the world. And, you know, that all came to an end. You know, the thing they did was the Democratic Party manipulated the black community. And they tried to put all this racism on Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like
we said the same thing now.
And he, you know, just for voting power. And then they pandered to the black community.
Yep.
With putting on Kente cloths and kneeling for 8 minutes and things of that nature. And what Joe Biden do when once he realized he was going to be the primary running for the Democrats, running for president, he knew one of the smartest things he could have did at that time and at that moment due to the sentiment of the country, you know, post George Floyd killing, was appoint Kamala Harris to run as vice president with him.
Right.
Now, you got black women who's sitting at home, who's not at work, you know, who are following all this and who are already emotional about George Floyd. Now they get, you know, they see themselves in Kamala Harris.
Yep.
But you know, what was funny is even though they saw themselves in Kamala Harris, it's like people refuse to dig deep into Kamala Harris and consider her background. And even those who did, they tried to defend her by saying, oh, she was just doing her job by locking those black people, black children up, black parents up in the state of California as a district attorney. You know, and Schiff even would tell evidence on a black man who was framed on a murder case by the, you know, the district attorney's office.
Right, right. Yeah, she's not for us. I mean, and then she claims her Pacific Island heritage more than she claims her African American heritage, you know. And honestly, I mean, where is she? Because you don't even really see her now, you know, that everything is said and done, because now she served her purpose. She helped him get that seat, and now she can go and sit back in the back like all the rest of us do, you know, once the purpose has been served. I'm going to throw
much.
A quick break in right quick, my brother, and I see I got 1941. I see you, 1941, wants to get in on the conversation. So I'm going to throw in a quick break. And also, okay, 9711, I'll open you up after 1941. And I see my brother still listening. But, yeah, I appreciate you brothers and sisters calling in. Appreciate everybody who's listening online. And my brother, Rakim, I sure appreciate you calling in again. And we're going to pick up on that subject, too. We'll get back off into that because that was one of the biggest scams. I was telling black people during the election, because every time one of them voted, you know, they would post it on Facebook with that little old white sticker, say, I voted. And I said, that's all y'all going to get for that damn vote is that damn sticker that you post on Facebook. But and pretty much that's all we've got. You know, I didn't vote for either one of them because I know better, and neither one of them going to serve our true purpose anyway. You know, that's the whole thing about this national selection that they do every 4 years. But we're going to get back off into that, and then I'm going to open up 1941, and then I'll open up 9711, and then we're going to circle back around, Brother Rakim. I'm going to leave your mic open, brother, because tonight this will be our show, and you can jump in anytime, because I'm just glad to have you back on here to join me again for a second time around. And thank everybody that's listening online. If you are listening online and would like to get in and ask questions or make comments, either or, you're more than welcome. The call-in number is 914-205-5538. Again, 914-205-5538. And this is the Panther Party Radio Network. This is The Big Picture with Melvin Steers Jr. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Do you feel that your message, apparent message of love that you brought back from Islam is the real reason they're after you, because you're not hating as hard as they want you to?
Well, I never did hate anybody hard. But I do know that when I wrote that letter saying that there were white people in Mecca, it shook up a lot of Muslims, because most of the Muslims who follow Mr. Muhammad absolutely believed that it was impossible, physically impossible, I should say divinely impossible, for a white person to go to Mecca. And my trip there shattered that image or that misconcept.
Anyone call you directly, Malcolm?
Oh, I've been receiving calls ever since I left the Black Muslim movement.
And what sort of calls, Malcolm? You're disenchanted in view of the fact that these men who were your brothers are making threats against your life?
No, because actually it's not their fault. Most of them, now Joseph and the officials, they have a knowledge of what it's all about. But the rank and file Muslim brother does not know what it's all about. They are out of religious sincerity. They think that they are doing the will of Allah by protecting a man who I myself taught them was divine. So I don't in any way fault them. But those who are over them and give the orders, and actually the ultimate order comes from Elijah Muhammad himself. As long as I represented the Black Muslim movement as an example of morality, unity, and militancy, as long as I could do that, I represented it. It was when I realized that it could not be represented as that, that I came on and started working among the non-Muslim Negroes, as I announced in January, and I had no intention, or rather March, and I had no intention of ever even speaking on this. Had they left me alone, you still wouldn't know what really took place.
Why are they threatening your life?
Well, primarily because they're afraid that I will tell the real reason that they've been, that I'm out of the Black Muslim movement, which I never told. I kept to myself. But the real reason is that Elijah Muhammad, the head of the movement, is the father of 8 children by 6 different teenage girls, 6 different teenage girls who were his private personal secretary. The one who first made me aware of this was Wallace Muhammad, Mr. Muhammad's son. And I had stated in a newspaper article about an effort to take my life back in January, and at that time the Muslims denied it. In fact, they tried to make it appear to my brother that I was insane. But on a program in Chicago called Hotline, that's moderated by Wesley South, John Ali, the national secretary, admitted, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, one of these days last week, that they absolutely were going to kill me.
What steps would you take to protect yourself from this threat?
I take no steps. I have a rifle. If anybody comes to my house without a good reason, I intend to try and use it. And that's all.
Right now?
No, I don't worry. I tell you, I'm a man who believed that I died 20 years ago. And I live like a man who is dead already. I have no fear whatsoever of anybody or anything.
All right, welcome back, Party Radio Network. This is The Big Picture with Melvin Siri Jr. And tonight I have joining me my brother Rakim Balogun. I appreciate him joining me for a second go around. Right now, if you're listening online, once again, that call-in number is 914-205-5538. You can call in, just hit that 1, and I'll open up your mic, and you can get in on the conversation, comments, questions, whatever you may have, opinions. I'm going to go down the line. 1941 has been waiting for a minute. While my brother had the floor, and I'm going to open up his mic now so that he can make his point. And then after he's done, 9711, I see you, and I will open your mic up next, and you can ask your question, make your comment, state your opinion. But appreciate you calling in. Just state your name, and the floor is yours, 1941.
All right, Brother Melvin, I appreciate that. Can you hear me?
Peace, peace. Yes, yeah, I can hear you, brother.
All right, peace to the family, peace to the kings, peace to the queen. Hotep, shalom, assalamu alaikum. This is Brother Manny Hotep. I am Field Marshal of the Black Panther Party under General Quincy Celestine. And that, Brother Rakim, I remember your story. I remember seeing it on Vice News. I remember seeing it on Facebook. Because I've been in this thing for a little while now, and when I heard the term black identity extremist, I kind of got the same feeling that Brother Melvin said he had. I was mad. I was mad isn't even the word for it. I was completely enraged because if anybody who studied this system, anybody who study how America works, we already know that they threw the first blow. So anytime a black man stands up and defends himself against this unjust system, they rear their ugly head and send all their race soldiers against us. So I remember your story. I remember commenting on the post on Facebook, and I think it was through Vice News. I'm pretty sure it was through Vice News when they went over your story. And I was just kind of like, at that moment, I felt like it could be any one of us. You know, if they can, if this system can make any black man who defends himself under the guise of the law, right? Because they say we have the Second Amendment where we have the right to bear arms. And most of the states we live in, we have a castle doctrine where, you know what I mean, you're able to defend yourself in your home. But it just seems that when a black man does it, the law don't exactly defend us the way it does our white counterparts. So, yeah, I remember your story. And I appreciate Brother Melvin having you on, because if I remember correctly, they came and locked you up under this black identity extremist guidelines, I guess. And they, at the end of the day, and I remember you saying this earlier in the conversation, at the end of the day, it didn't stand up under the Constitution of America. But the thing that struck me the most is that it never really stands up when it comes to us. I remember Brother Melvin earlier talking about the cop in, was it Minnesota, who shot the white lady. And when you look into that white lady's background, she had a whole criminal history. She had a whole drug history. You know what I mean? And it struck me in my heart because of the simple fact that, like, even if you're a black man, an upstanding black man in this community, and, you know, white supremacists love to bring up Malcolm, right? And, I mean, they love to bring up Martin. They have to bring up Malcolm. But they love to bring up Martin and say, judge a man by his character, and that was our forefathers, and that has nothing to do with us and everything, right? But if you're an upstanding black man in this system today, and you handle your business, and you take care of your business, and you ain't got a criminal record and all that, even if your character is judged against a white man who has all types of criminal history, all types of drug history, you know what I'm saying? Like, it just strikes me so profoundly that you could be a man who's completely following the law, just defending your people, just taking care of your people, just trying to do something positive for your people, that they will literally send the FBI. They will literally send the FBI to come get you. And I don't know, like, when I heard your story, that was the day that it came. I mean, don't get me wrong, I know the history, I know what they've always done to our prophets, but to see that today, you know, after all the marches and after all the protesting, and we're talking about the 2000s, 2020, 2019 or something like that, that we're still dealing with the same thing that Malcolm Martin was talking about back in the 60s is just, I don't even have the word for it, to be completely honest. So I just want to say that you inspired me, you know, even in the position that I'm already in the party, and, like, trying to move us forward in another place. Brother, you I'm still trying to master that cadence and speaking in a way that people can hear me, you know what I'm saying, clearly. But you inspired me, because even facing the full force of the United States, you stood on your square. And I hope that's what we all do when we come into that situation. That's really what I want to say. Because when you walk this path and you going through what we're going through on a daily basis, and you actually speak out even on a macro, and on a macro or a micro level, it don't matter if you just, your everyday job, standing up for your people, you know, or literally facing the whole force of the United States government, you standing up for your people. I hope all black men start to realize that this is what we need to do if we ever going to get anywhere. Because just like you said, we pretty much getting the same thing under Biden that we got under Trump. All these black people went out and voted for Biden, and he haven't gave us nothing. And I was just looking on social media today, and he's talking about giving $100,000+ to every migrant that was separated at the border under Trump, right? But black people been going through all this we've been going through in America for 400 plus years, and they haven't offered us a dime. So I just kind of feel like we all need to take your example. And we all need to stand up a little bit harder to the point where the FBI looking at us, because that's what it's going to take. You know, that's what it's going to take for there to be so many of us that they like, we got to do something. We can't, you know, and I feel like we've been procrastinating and we've been playing the games. And I have spoke on it many times about us procrastinating and playing the games and going along with this system. And as long as we keep doing that, ain't nothing going to change. So I just want you to know that after everything you done went through and after everything that you done had to endure with this system trying to come against you, you know what I'm saying, and they putting this bullshit title on you, black identity extremist, because there's really no such thing. Y'all threw the first blow. We just defending ourselves. So I just want you to know, brother, that at the end of the day, you're not by yourself. There's a lot of us out here. Well, yeah, I'm going to stick to that. There's a lot of us out here. And it's growing, because the more of us there is, the more of us we touch, right? So I just want you to know that them putting your story out there on national news, they just pretty much confirming your legacy. You feel me? Don't look at it as a bad thing. Look at it as a badge of honor, because the brothers who think like you do and the brothers who in the same system as you are and the brothers who, you know what I'm saying, have taken the time to learn the history and are conscious, and they want to protect their people. We look up to you. It's really a badge of honor. So I just want to let you know that I'm pretty sure my general is on the line and he wants to speak. So I'm gonna go ahead and let everybody else have their comments. But I just wanted to let you know that everything you're going through, we appreciate you. You know, you're not by yourself. I would love to talk to you outside the line, you know, and give you my number. So if you ever needed to reach out to somebody, you can. But I just wanted to let you know that you are not by yourself. And there's a lot of other brothers who think like you. And we appreciate you for what you do. And that's all I want to say.
I appreciate you, brother. I appreciate the motivation and the morale boost that you have provided. And you know, that's definitely, you know, always needed. And, yeah, you can always, you can reach out to me on my social media under Rakim Balogun on Facebook and Instagram. You know, send me a contact and I'll definitely, you know, correspond. And we could definitely meet. If you don't mind, where are you located?
I'm in St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay, St. Louis. Okay, most definitely.
Yeah.
I was going out
right
there.
Right in the middle
of
the map, so I could pretty much get anywhere.
Okay. Yeah, I was going out there a lot during the whole Mike Brown situation. You know, I was organizing with a lot of different brothers out there in St. Louis. You know, I got love for St. Louis. You know, I think St. Louis, you know, set a great example for the nation. You know, and, you know, we're in the response of Mike Brown. And I think St. Louis don't get the credit of creating the resistant protest culture in the black community in relation to, you know, police terrorism. You know, so, you know, big up to St. Louis, you know, for, you know, representing, inspiring, and, you know, motivating and pushing the culture, because, you know, during that time, you know, was a, you know, special moment, because really that Mike Brown, the whole Mike Brown situation was a situation that really changed the narrative on how the black community as a whole look at police brutality, because right after that, Freddie Gray in Baltimore, you know, we saw how Baltimore reacted. You know, they resembled, you know, St. Louis and Ferguson. You know, so, you know, just, you know, it's cities. You know, a lot of times, you know, I've heard a lot of negative things about St. Louis, you know, but it's the people like that that has that revolution, that has that real revolutionary potential, you know, it's because of the conditions, you know, and So, you know, yeah. I respect, you know, I've met a lot of brothers from St. Louis. I know St. Louis ain't no easy city, you know.
True.
So big ups, brother. I look forward to building with you in the future.
Ashe, if I may for just a second, you're absolutely right. St. Louis is not an easy city. It's one of the number one cities for police homicide. And we really don't get no justice because police killing black men, I heard every day. Even our activists and our protesters, like there's been a few protesters, like lead protesters from the Ferguson riots and all that, who were found shot and burned in their cars. Like literally the same MO for every, you know, but we're working on that. We're working on that. We definitely have a revolutionary spirit. I saw that a long time ago, and that's why I decided to jump into the ring and actually get the political education to be an effective leader, you know, not just out here without some type of guidance or motivation. I mean, I had the motivation, but without some type of guidance. But that's why I like to link up with you, brother, because when I heard your story, I related because I knew since we know the history, you know, and I knew since the moment that I decided that this is what I was going to do with the rest of my life, that there may always be a day that I'm in the same position that they try to put you in. So that's why we try to live a righteous life, and we try to live a life where they can't pin no, you know what I mean? They can't pin no just. We try to live a type of life where they can't give us what we don't deserve. But at the end of the day, we also know how the system works. And sometimes, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm in St. Louis, but sometimes my general is already all the way in New Orleans. You know, it's a lot of us, but we're not consolidated. So, like, you don't run into these type of brothers every day. So that's why I like to link up with brothers like you and Brother Melvin and General Quincy. And, you know what I'm saying, other brothers from across the world, because, like, it get a little lonely sometimes. You feel like you're by yourself, and that's why I wanted to tell you that you're not by yourself. There's other brothers who think like you. There's other brothers who actually understand the way you understand. They see what our people going through on a daily basis, even when they don't see it. So I just wanted to give you that affirmation to let you know that you are not by yourself at all. So anytime. I would definitely reach out to you on social media, and we appreciate your work.
I appreciate you. And, you know, one more thing I wanted to make you aware. I wanted to make you aware that the first case of black identity extremists really came out of St. Louis. And I don't know if you're aware of that, but it was a brother named Ali that was a part of the New Black Panther Party. He was, you know, a pretty cool brother. You know, I went up there and, you know, linked with him a couple times. But he was a young brother. I think he was like a Muslim. He was a part of like the Nation. He had like a kind of like a unique mustache, you know. He was pretty eclectic, you know. Like he was a New Black Panther, he was militant, but you know he would, you know, do different, like wear like a cape, you know, like a black cape with his uniform. You know, he was just unique, but he was a cool young brother. He was talented, things of that nature. The FBI pretty much did an entrapment on him. By, you know, exploiting his youth and his, you know, lack of knowledge or aware of. And, you know, they reached out and communicated via online and offered him to sell him, you know, grenades and rifles and other weapons. And he was interested, and they used that to do a arrest, and they wind up, it was like a federal case. It was real big. They said that he was blow up the arches in St. Louis.
I remember this.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, so, yeah, I that brother Ali, Olajuwon Ali, that's his name.
He's still in Missouri? Do you know?
Yeah, he's in the Fed. I forgot where they have him now.
I'll look him up.
Yeah.
But I remember that story when you said the part with the cape and blowing up the arches. We heard it on our local news. Yeah, I remember that. But I think it was a few years ago, wasn't it? Because I was a little young then when I think I heard
it. Yeah, it was during the whole Mike Brown situation. But, you know, it was just so much going on during that. So it was just a lot going on during that time, remember? It was like random shootings at police.
I was here. I remember. Yeah, the scene was going crazy. I remember.
So it was so much information coming out, you know, that, you know, a lot of people, I believe if it would have happened now, the response to it would have been a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know?
It got swept under the rug because of everything else that was going on. I remember that name, though. I can't remember exactly what. I think it was a local news story that I heard it. But I remember that name, Ali Olajuwon. I remember that name because I thought of Hakeem Olajuwon when I heard it. Like, I don't know. This is how my brain works.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that name. I got to look him up and see what we can do to help that brother out. I don't know. It's blowing my mind because I really can't.
I know earlier you referenced Darren Seals as well.
Killed in his car, shot in the head twice.
That was shot in the back of the head in the car.
And burned up his car. There was about
prominent
activists.
Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah, I met him.
I met him a couple times.
Yeah, he was a real solid brother, you know, and, you know, he was down. And he was a representation of what they call a lumping proletariat type of brother that was, you know, passionate about the community and his people, you know. And a lot of, you know, there was a lot of speculations from different things. And you probably know, I'm sure you know a lot more than I know or what. But, you know, a lot of it, you know, there are some people that tries to connect that to what happened between him and the white boy, Black Lives Matter.
Well, if I could be completely frank with you for a second, it's not just the white boy. There are a couple of, like, Cori Bush. I mean, Cori, who went from St. Louis to the Senate, if she wouldn't have went to the position that she would have been in, she would have been next. 12 out here in St. Louis is literally killing off all our activists. That's why I sleep with a pistol. You know what I mean? When I go to work, I have a gun in my car. When I come home, I have a gun in my car, and I'm always watching to make sure nobody's following me. Police in St. Louis ain't just trying to lock up our activists. They're trying to kill us, every single one of us. That's the only reason I don't live in the same house as the mother of my children. You know what I mean? I have my own apartment by myself that if they come for us, I mean, if they come for me, she's not here. You know what I mean? Like, St. Louis is a whole different type of monster, right? Because we're right in the middle of the map. We're not necessarily northern, but we're not necessarily southern either. You know, it's like that whole Midwest.
Yeah, you're in the Midwest.
So, yeah, our activists literally get put in the Mississippi River and never get seen again. So I know what I'm signing up for when I did this, but at the same time, it's just kind of like you said earlier, if we don't do something, nothing's going to change, you know? So St. Louis is one of those cities where, like, anything goes, you got a little bit of everything, you know what I mean? So I could have went either way. And for a long time, I was on the other side of things. I didn't see things the way I see them now, you know, and I got a whole lot I got to make up for. I'm not even supposed to be here right now. That's not a story I'm going to get into because it's going to take up too much of the show. But I'm not even supposed to be here right now. So I decided at that point that for the rest of my life, I'm going to try to live my life for my people, you know. So that's why I just wanted to tell you, brother. I'm not trying to take up the show or nothing like that, but that's why I wanted to tell you, brother.
Oh, it's all good, brother.
It's not just you.
It's all good.
You know, other people see it the way you see it. You know what I'm saying? And the thing you're going through right now, it could have been any one of us revolutionaries. They could have just took their pick. They just saw you as the strongest, so they tried to take you down. You know what I'm saying? Take it as a compliment. And I just wanted to let you know that the rest of us who see this thing the same way you do, we appreciate what you're going through, and you're not in it by yourself. That's really all I wanted to say.
I appreciate that, brother.
Let me jump in here real quick, brother, and open up Mike 9711. He's been waiting patiently to get in. All right, brother, introduce yourself in 9711. I probably know who you are, but I just don't remember numbers like we used to have to do. But welcome to the show, and your mic is
peace
open.
To the God. Peace and black power, family. General Quincy Celestine, and I just want to thank you, Brother Melvin. I want to thank you, Brother Rakin, who's sharing your story, and of course I gotta thank my dear Field Marshal Jesse. You know, I mean, we sacrificed and we put a whole lot on the line, fellas, behind what it is that we know to be true from our own experiences. We don't need nobody to tell us, hey, look, you know, America is this, and America is the land of opportunity, home of the free, and the land of the brave, or some shit like that. I mean, we see it for what it is. So I want to salute you, brother Rakim. I want to salute you, and I want to thank you for being as courageous as you have been. And you're still continuing in your walk, in your revolutionary struggle. Man, I ain't got nothing but love and respect for you, King.
I see.
I ain't got nothing but love and respect for you, man, because you could have just sat down and said, well, like everybody else, or, you know, like the masses of us. That's why in the Black Panther Party, we're talking about survival pending revolution. There are those of us, like yourself, my brother, who refuse to assimilate. No, I'm not going to go along with that false story. I know that's a false narrative. I'm going to tell the truth. Oh, well you got to be quiet. You know, because you know how folks be telling this. You know, our family members. You got to be quiet because, you know, the people will come after you. Man, I don't give a damn. I'm telling the truth. It's like Malcolm said. Well, shit, if I told a lie, they'd lock me up. But you see, they didn't lock him up. They couldn't lock him up because he was telling the truth. Like you are, brother. Like my dear Field Marshal is. Like you, Brother Melvin. Like how you are and how you've opened up this platform for all of us brothers, to share, our strength, wisdom, and experience. So don't discount anything that you do. Any one of you, brother. That's all I wanted to say. And peace and black power to you, man. Yeah, I love each and every one of you brothers in this struggle that took up this struggle, man. I love each and every one of you. Peace and black power, family. All power to the people.
Black power. All power to the people.
All right. All right. Appreciate the Brother Quincy. I'm glad. You got anything you want to throw in there, Brother Rakim?
Pretty much, I'm honored and thankful for the solidarity that's been expressed, while being a guest on the show. I appreciate everybody. And just know, I honor and I value them in the same way. And I just
want to
express my solidarity to everybody on the show.
No doubt. Much appreciated. All power to the people, brother. So I still got a little time. So I'm just going to really open up this last few minutes, I guess. Brother Rakim, I'm gonna give you the floor for a minute. I just want you to kind of let the people know what it is that y'all do around the city, within the city, the programs. I know when we spoke on the phone, you were telling me about the program that y'all were y'all do to work with the youth, and you know, and I have expressed a real deep interest, and we're gonna get the link up on one of these weekends when I'm not in that truck pushing product up and down the highway, where we can have us a sit down and a face to face. But I want to give you an opportunity to kind of just let the people know what y'all do around the Dallas Fort Worth area.
Well, pretty much what we try to do is function as the arms and legs of the community. We do that by, you know, organizing with the community and provide the community with resources to become more and more autonomous, as well as organized in our one accord. We do it through political education, providing, you know, mutual aid events, you know, for that can be geared towards, you know, specific people such as, you know, single mothers, lower income families, and things of that nature. Also, we create, say again?
Oh, I was just saying right on.
Yeah, so also we create, you know, events for the youth to engage the youth, where we can promote, you know, certain healthy things such as, you know, cultural awareness and building, you know, cultural self-esteem within, you know, poor communities. The people of color,
right,
and we also promote, you know, healthy living, holistic health, exercise, and you know being more moral and principled person in your community. We provide, you know, self-defense course, you know, classes for the youth, which helps them, you know, become more fit and exercise and healthy, and as well as, you know, it helps boost their self-esteem as well and their confidence and teach them, you know, work ethics. We also, you know, organize with other groups and organizations to tackle on certain issues, no matter if it's, you know, police brutality, maybe dealing with a specific case, or maybe even patrolling a certain community where it's pretty high and rampant. Sometimes we have to intervene and, you know, gang wars, black-on-black crime, or even domestic violence situations. You know, it's so we have also been involved in being a consistent, reliable resources for gardens that provide free and healthy food to those in the community that need. So, you know, we'll play the role of you know, help building above ground plots and, you know, as well as growing, you know, fruits, vegetables, and herbs.
Right. Because I know when we had spoke prior to the first show, and I know that we both was talking about, you know, just land, buying land and the brick and mortar and, you know, the importance of having land and having our own businesses. And I don't know, I'm just in the mindset now of now even more than ever, because being in the transportation business, I mean, I've saw this shortage, and it's actually been a shortage. It's not just happening. It's been going on for a few months now. And, I mean, every warehouse I go to, every warehouse is backlogged. So there's product right now that's sitting in warehouses that can't be moved. And then you couple that with all the rail cars that are sitting out there in the ocean right now with product, and harder times on the way. And I always make it a point to say how much we need each other, because I just, you know, you repetitive and the subliminal message within it. I feel like if I keep saying it enough, we'll start getting it, you know, because most definitely here in the next few upcoming months, we're going to need each other a whole lot, because I'm just to a point where we should all know this by now, just from what we saw the government do and not do during the shutdown before. And there's another one coming, because supplies are going to be so limited. And then you couple that in with how they are dividing people with this vaccine. So what I can see coming down the pike is a real dictatorial type of system, where those who are not vaccinated are not going to have access, and those who are not vaccinated are going to be just as hungry as those who are vaccinated. So we're going to have what this system does best, create chaos. You know, this system makes money off of chaos and divide and conquer tactics. And that's something that I can see coming that I hope start getting more prepared for, because, like I say, we're about to need each other now more than we ever know. And I posed this question to some brothers the other day in the barbershop, and it made them think, because I said, what if our ancestors were as nonchalant about being oppressed and mistreated as we are? Because we got it a little better than they did, yeah, that's a fact. But it still exists. You know, it's not like it's gone. And some of us act as just do whatever it is that we want. And in a free country, we're supposed to be able to. But in this country, we know as black men and black women, that's not feasible. That, you know, we're always under rule of thumb. And not just here, that's anywhere you go on this globe, and you're darker than most, you know. So I don't know. It's so need that we're not even collectively, and that's my whole thing too. I mean, I often sit and think, what is it that can be said that will truly wake us up and make us think unity, that'll wake us up and make us realize how powerful we can be, Because there's no doubt in my mind, if we refocus and redirect what we have, we can take care of one another, and then we won't have to keep begging this system to do what we should know by now it's not going to do. You know, we have saw this president and Kamala do anti-Asian hate bills, and like the brother was speaking earlier, allotting all this money aside for refugees and land as well. And they swear up and down they don't have anything for us, you know. And there's always something that you can give that's worth value. Like I always say, free health care, tax exemption. But the thing is, they don't give us nothing unless everybody gets a part of it. You know, if we're going to be the only ones benefiting, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. But if everybody can get a piece of it, they'll do it. And that's why everybody's gotten reparations except us. And not only that, we got to stand stronger, you know. Like I always say, it's up to us men, because we the muscle, we the ultimate warrior, the most superior warrior on this planet is us. And that's why they work so hard to keep us from coming together, keep us divided, and keep us at each other's throats, and we fall right into the plan, you know. So I'm going to be quiet. I was just throwing some things out there because I know y'all recognize and understand, and I often ask myself, like I say, what will it take to truly wake us up, to snap us out of this slumber? And like I say, collectively, not just a few of us, because I always use that example of Birmingham, because it worked, because everybody participated in that boycott. And the boycott is effortless, but we know it's effective, because in a capitalistic society, without that money, they'll crumble. Either one of y'all got any thoughts on that one?
I'm sorry, brother, what'd you say?
I was just throwing some points out there, and I was just wanting to kind of get y'all thoughts on that.
It's going to take for people to wake up.
Go ahead, brother.
Well, you know, I think it's going to take two things. It can either be one or the other. The first one is obvious, which is conditions. Conditions will force people to organize. Conditions will force two people who don't like each other to depend on each other to survive. Depending on, you know, how severe that condition is. And one thing about the white man, one thing he learned from slavery and brute colonialism is that real bad conditions make capitalism a lot more difficult than what it needs to be, because they know that people would naturally resist those conditions. So they have to keep the conditions in a way to where people are not straight oblivious or straight disgusted, but they keep the conditions when you're one step away from that, you know. And they give that's why they create things such as credit and things of that nature. So we can still go get the things that we can't afford, you know. So that went along with conditions. you know, because if, let's just think about if you had to have the full amount for that Dodge Charger, then too many people would not have a Charger or a Challenger. Mercedes-Benz or whatever. But, you know, the credit and financing and things where what it does is it kind of eases the pain of capitalism. But, you know, you're always one paycheck away of losing those things. So those are the conditions we live in. Right now, the conditions are good enough to where it's able to provide some of the wants of the people. You know, another thing is, you know, organization. You know, when you have a movement that's real organized and that is based off of principle unity and have a real genuine sincere culture and that's consistent and reliable, you know, that's what helps people wake up, you know. But then something like that doesn't happen overnight. I think one of the biggest problems that why we can't wake people up because we don't want to organize people. The only thing we want to do is mobilize them. You know, Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, he talks about that. He talks about the difference between Malcolm and Martin Luther King. Malcolm organized, and that was his approach. Martin Luther King was great in mobilizing, you know, and so he would mobilize people to a location, but, you know, after the event, he had nothing for them that was sustained because that was required to be organized. You would have had to organize the people to have them work towards the things that they need to be able to face the things that need to be addressed, you know. But that takes a lot of work, and that's the part that's not sensational. It's not fun. It's fun to go city to city and do marches, do open carry with your guns, with all your new tactical gear you just bought off of Amazon and look like a tier 1 operator. You know, do some black militant cosplay. That's fun. You get to take pictures, you walk around, people look at you with a certain admiration. But what's not fun is being in a community on a consistent basis and, you know, meeting the needs of the people, you know, and touching their heart and mind, genuinely and sincerely. You know, and until our organization and organizers get to the point to be to be like Geronimo, you know, to be like Eldridge, you know, so many brothers and sisters who was consistent and they put in the work. You know, when you read Feast of Time by Bobby Seale and you hear him talk about how him and Huey, you know, was pretty much spending every weekend going out to meet the people where they're at and pool halls and things of that nature. Huey even had to fight a couple people to get the people to change. You know, but that's how passionate they were to build a movement like that. Now, give and take, we can take into consideration a dialectical materialism where things are not exactly the same of 1966, October 1966, as it is today. There's a lot of technology, the whole world functions totally different. And it's actually harder to organize in this day and time than it was in October 1966. Because in October 1966, you had nothing to distract you from white terrorism and white supremacy on black people. It was every day. It was in your face. And there was nothing to distract you from. There was no Instagram, internet, or even a mobile device.
Right.
You know? And so we had to read books. We had to sit down and listen, have conversations with them, things of that nature. So it would be easy to get the people attention. But in today's time, you know, TikTok videos are like 10 seconds. Can you know that the attention span of a person is very short? So that means that we have to organize a lot harder, a lot more intense than what Bobby and Huey did in October 1966.
Right.
And we have to get out of our comfort zone and put our pride and ego to the side and be able to, you know, walk among, you know, the masses of the people and you know, serve them. Because people are not just, you know, people have life going on. There's so many distractions.
Yeah.
And they may see police brutality and be emotionally affected by it. But at the same time, while they're watching that video, they know on their phone or their laptop, they know tomorrow that the internet may get cut out and they may have to do a payday loan to pay them, or the room is still late. And so those are the things that consumes their mind. You know, and so they have to understand why those things are consuming their minds on a regular basis, and how can we as a collective, you know, work together to, you know, end that reality for, you know, people like that. And it just, you can't do that with a Facebook post or with a tweet or a TikTok video.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has to be done, you know, face to face, you know, your feet on their school.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Bringing the human element back into it. Because, yeah, I've said this a few times, you know, social media has successfully succeeded in making people unsociable, because you can walk in any given restaurant right now at this hour and five people sitting at a table and three of them got their face in their phone. The other two may be talking, maybe not. But, you know, we don't communicate how we should, and you said it, you know, back then we had to rely on each other, you know, and I think we should still have that same urgency now, but, you know, unfortunately we don't, you know, some of us feel like we've gotten to a certain plateau and we don't have to worry about what I used to worry about, but what some of us as black men and black women fail to understand is that as long as we're wrapped in this melanated body, that we're going to always be under the telescope. We're going to always be public enemy number one. You know, we're going to always be the focus of attention to bringing people down, you know. So when the focus of genocide happens to be you, there should be a sense of urgency. And I'm like you too, Brother Rakim, because I do agree it is more about getting out there amongst the people and talking to the people and letting the people know that you truly concerned. Because I'm like this, the more that our children see that, our children are grasp a hold of that. And that's who we really need to be encouraging now, because they're a weaker, wiser generation. And they are much wiser, because my grandkids can work iPads and telephones, and the oldest one of them is 3. So, yeah, they pick up on things very quickly. And we got to sow into them that, you know, do the right thing. Practice doing the right thing. Don't be ashamed of being your beautiful black self, you know. Don't let anybody or shame you for being proud of who you are, because a lot of times that happens with our children. Because I can remember when I was a youth, and this was a while back, I'm 52 now, but I can remember being in the fifth grade and starting to study American history, and the first thing you learn about black people is you were slaves. And see, even at that age, that didn't sit right with me, because I know I got black people in my family, and I know they just what that book was saying, you know. And so we got to give our kids a sense of pride, self-pride, and you know, give them back the ability to hope and dream, you know. I was telling some brothers the other day, you know, it's sad that, I mean, I can remember when I graduated and I was going to go to the Air Force, scored a 93 on my test, and then my girlfriend at the time got pregnant, and I got a job and went to work, and I thought nothing else about the military. And it's sad, because I had a lot of friends that went, that we, and I'm not saying just us, because there are some poor white people out here now who are experiencing the same thing we've been experiencing, and I've been talking at them too. But, you know, we shouldn't have to have our youth, because most of them go because it's an opportunity to get a started life, you know, is be a free, but you got to put your life on the line. You got to do what Uncle Sam say. And this government ain't never gave a damn about us, and this government don't give a damn about wars and creating chaos. That's what it does best, you know. And then not only that, we need those young minds and legs fighting our battles, because the battles that they fighting for them don't benefit them, you know. Nothing that anybody does for this system benefits them wholly, and definitely not us. Like I say, it's time for us to make something that works for us, not something that we just benefit from, because this system will give us something that we may benefit from for a moment, but it's not going to work for us for the long term. And that's what we gotta fix. You know, we gotta get to that point where we already know what's wrong, we know what we need, and we have everything we need. Honestly, not declining reparations, because, yeah, if any people deserve them, our people do deserve them. But why not go ahead and just start working together and start reparating each other, as opposed to waiting on this raggedy-ass system that ain't going to do it, you know? So I don't know. Those are just things that I think, and I know it's just, like, easier said than done. But those are just some of my critical points, because we need our own schools, most definitely. We need to get our kids out of their school system. That's first and foremost. I think that needs to be one of our main focuses, because our kids deserve the truth, and our kids, there's just so much going on within these schools, and especially around this Dallas-Fort Worth area with these racial incidences popping up and stuff. So that shit starts at home. Them kids ain't just learn how to say nigga and feel the way they feel. That's mama and daddy. See, so the problem is we, and that's a good thing, but we must teach self-defense to our children. It's important because we still live in racist America, land of the free, home of the slave. So there are things that we must do to secure our children's safety, and not only that, a future. You know, so that's our job as the elders in the community, and that's our job as individuals within the communities, is to help the community thrive, help the community be the best community it can be, and fixing it, because we're not the only ones that, you know, despite what this system and this media always try to pump down people's throat about black neighborhoods being the most violent and all that. That's not true, because I've been in plenty of so-called spots throughout Dallas and Fort Worth that people say is dangerous, but it's about how you conduct yourself. And if you want to, like my mom used to tell me, show yourself friendly if you want to make friends. And you walk up in there mugging, well, you're going to get that in return. So you got to, it's about your approach. And then if you're trying to get people to change, yeah, you definitely have to be able to not only reach them, you got to be able to motivate them and make them want what they ain't never had, you know? So that's really a big part of what we do as well in this fight. And I also say this, because don't ever feel like you haven't got anything to contribute, because people in this fight may need bottled water. People may need flyers printed. There's so many things that can be done to help progress the fight. And start learning how to work together and let your money go so that you can actually see some more money coming. And Brother Rakim, I know I follow you, and I know that you off into the trading and stuff, and I'm also playing around with it. I'm a rookie, but I'm not losing at this point. But just things that we can do to produce wealth, anything that we can do to produce wealth and then put back into ourselves. I've been telling a lot of people, my particular profession is about to have job security for the next probably 2.5-3 years before they get all this stuff caught up, if they get it caught up. I often feel like time's running out. It ain't going to be enough time to fix nothing before the end starts. But that's just my opinion and my thoughts from what I see. I tell anybody, you know, this business is about to be very secure. You know, they need drivers right now. There's like an 80,000 driver shortage. That's a business, you know.
Well, I think one of the things we have to be concerned about is the automation and the AI. You know, every year automation and artificial intelligence become 40% cheaper than the previous year. And so, you know, Tesla is already producing an 18-wheeler that can be self-reliable. You know, and they already have blockchain for logistics that would remove the brokers, the dispatchers, and other, you know, middlemen that's involved in, you know, logistics and transportation. Right now, this is not a concern, but 10 years from now, it will be a concern. And, you know, that's something that we have to, you know, prepare for. A lot of that thing that have kept the black community going and surviving is jobs and capitalism needing a labor force. Once a labor force is not needed, then if you're not already heavily invested and tied to capitalism, then more than likely, you know, you will start to, you know, your finances and your assets will start to drop and deplete. And that's why it's very important that, you know, we don't become too distracted by the Facebook metaverse or, you know, the things that are coming down the line. And we got to stay focused on, you know, organizing. And because another thing is, you know, we're running out of fresh water. That's another thing that's not talked about. And it's very difficult to purify salt water. Mm-hmm. And so that would make water very expensive.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's another thing we have to take into consideration that's coming down the line. And so it's very important that we do get organized and we start building networks and you know, strategical planning group, reaction group, think tanks and things of that nature. You know.
Right.
We need a national grid. You know, if all the water becomes deadly in Detroit, we need a national grid where black people in Detroit will have somewhere to go and feel comfortable to leave that place and not just drink themselves to death.
Right.
And because we can't always be heavily relying on FEMA.
I don't know. FEMA is anything. I'm just really to a point, brother, where, I mean, anything government connected is just hard for me to trust. And FEMA, you know, is like the FEMA camps that they setting up around the country. Like I say, they've got their plan in motion, and a lot of people are really not paying attention to it. FEMA is just another extension of enforcement, you know, for the government, in my opinion. You still there, brother?
So, you know, we've been rock-leaped by the Democratic Party. You know, we allow them to escape with the narrative that they defeated racism by beating Donald Trump in the electoral and for the president, you know, the run for the president, you know. And so we have to understand, just like Malcolm said, no matter if you're left wing, right wing, you're still on the same damn bird.
Same bird, yep. Exactly.
And it's going the same direction.
Exactly.
You know, we have to be politically educated to teach our people about political theater And so they won't be so easily sucked into it. So that's what happened.
Right.
The people got lost in, you know, the people in our community are really getting lost into political theater and not understanding that, you know, all this stuff is on one accord in the line. Hey, brother,
yep.
I think I hear some static. Is that on my end or?
It may be on my end, the part of the country where I'm at. Yeah, it may actually be on my end because my connection is kind of weak where I'm at right now. That's why I'm trying to, I got still because I know where I'm at. Yeah, because I'm actually traveling. So, yeah, it's probably on my end. But I got about 8 minutes, brother, if you want to make a closing remark to the people and give them your information again as far as how to get in contact with you.
Yes, and thank you. I can be – the easiest way to reach me is via social media. Facebook and Instagram, my name within the search bar of Facebook or Instagram, you can find me. My name is Rakim Balogun. The way to spell it is R as in Romeo, A as in Alpha, K as in Kilo, E as in Echo, M as in Mike, and last name spelled B as in Bravo, A as in Alpha, L as in Lima, O as in Oscar, G as in Golf, U is in uniform and N is in November. Rakim Balogun. Yeah, so, you know, don't hesitate to reach out to me. You know, I'm pretty easy to approach and communicate with and open, you know, and let's build, you know, let's try to set an example and let's leave something for the next generation. Something more than Facebook pictures and videos.
Definitely. Yeah, and I wanna have you back too, brother. Probably in another couple of weeks or so. I'm wanting to just have an open discussion with the brothers. Just some round table man talk where a bunch of us brothers. Some of your comrades, my comrades, and just comrades from wherever can call in that night and kind of just brainstorm, you know. Swap ideas, and then not only that, make some good networking connections because I do appreciate your openness and, yeah, your willingness, you know, to tell your story, brother. I appreciate you. Coming on, and like I told you the first time, you know, you more than welcome on my platform anytime, you and the brothers, because like I say, I'm all about uniting all that want to get over the top of that damn mountain, because it's time for us to get over the top of that damn mountain and start setting up shop and doing what we do best, which is create, you know. We're one of the most creative people here. We built this. And if we can do this for them, we definitely should be able to do it for ourselves. You know, so I appreciate your time once again, brother. And like I say, my platform is always open to you. You're always welcome here, brother. And I'm sure I'll be getting at you offline so we can link up, you know, like I say, and I can meet some of your comrades and start doing some networking and, you know, getting to know them brothers as well. Because, like I say, it's really about this black first fight, you know. We got to start putting ourselves first because nobody put us first, you know. We ain't never had a president to put us first. We had a black president in hell. He didn't even put us first. So it's going to be up to us, you know, the like-minded individuals who are really out here living this struggle every day. And that's not these entertainers, it's not these athletes, because They on a different level than we on. They don't struggle the way we struggle. They don't have to worry about their kids walking to the corner store getting harassed by a policeman or none of that. So we got to start linking up those of us who are living this, because there's too many of us living it not to be fixing it. So them is my closing words for tonight. I want us to get it together, and let me throw this on in here too, because we need each other out here, and we need each other now more than ever. And like I said, just keep saying good morning, and in the next few weeks, we all gonna see how much we need each other. You heard Brother Rakim, and he just enlightened me. I had heard about the water shortage, but, you know, those are the kind of things that this media and this system doesn't want us to know about, things that really we should know about that have a direct effect on us. But we're in America, and we can't forget that. And that's why we have to stay on our P's and Q's and stay on top of our game and start doing what's best for us and start putting us first. So with that being said, like I always say in closing, let me back up a minute. Let me thank all my listeners, and I want to thank Brother Q for calling in, and I want to thank Phil Marshall from St. Louis for calling in as well. I want to thank my brother Kevin for calling in, listening, and all those that listened online, brothers and sisters in Nigeria, Germany, appreciate y'all very much, very much. Canada, U.S., be back next Monday with another topic. And like I say in closing, let's plan, organize, and unify, because we all have a key. Love y'all. I'm out. Thank you again, Brother Rakim.
No problem. My honor. Truly my honor. Peace and power.
Right on. Peace, power, and love, brother. I'm out. Till next week. This has been The Big Picture with Melvin Siri Jr.
Homie, I hope you see the big picture, because everything ain't what it seems. And when you get what you ain't paid for, somebody owe, because ain't a damn thing free. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see the big picture. Somebody get paid just to polish it. Look the devil right in the eyes and won't acknowledge it. For some it's automatic that they turn into some college kids. But my kind won't make it out the hood without a scholarship. Faced with adversity that some will never understand. Why be in denial when you know you had the upper hand? Clan used to rally downtown in my city, and you wonder why the race relationship's so shitty? Show no pity, that's the motto of the PC. It ain't just my city, it's all over the TV. Martin Luther King, I think about the dream he had for a nation that turned him less than 6 feet. And I ain't saying that the government sent a hit, but the time and show make it a coincidence. I try to see the big picture through a small frame, and never take no wooden nickels when they all change. I hope you see the big picture, cause everything ain't what it seems. And when you get what you ain't paid for, somebody owe, cause ain't a damn thing free. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see
they a picture's worth a thousand words. So when your words say invisible, it cause concern. I live and learn to the point where I can see it coming. The loudest mouth in the room ain't really about nothing. That nigga bluffing, check his resume, it ain't legit. You know the one that bought the ocean but ain't got a ship. You know the one that bought the sixes but ain't got a whip. You know the one that bought the Tech 9 and ain't got a clip. These boys a trip, I done heard it all, seen it all before. Boys be more like shaved ice when they claim they Tony Snow. Say they Don Juan and got passport bitches. But why you in the club with some trash bags with you? Say you out there ballin' and you're coming up quick, but it ain't worth having things if you can't own shit. MC Breeze told you ain't no future, no frontin'. Keep that shit to Birdman with all of that stun. Homie, I hope you see the big picture, cause everything ain't what it seems.
And when you get what you ain't paid for, somebody owe, cause ain't a damn thing free. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see the big picture, 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 picture. I hope you see the big picture.